Welcome to Dental Brain Crops. I am your host, Chelsea Myers, and today I am so excited. I have Dr. Eric J. Roman with me. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Chelsea. It's been fun getting to know you.
It's been really exciting. You know, it was one of those things where I definitely knew who you were and saw you around at a bunch of different places. And then I think we finally connected at a Dykema event. And it was really funny because it was like the end of the night. It had been like a long day, lots of socializing and learning. And you and I were at the same table and we were talking and you were like, hey, so what is your most exciting thing that you've done in your life lately? And I remember my answer because afterwards I thought about it. My answer was my youngest, my toddler is now potty trained. And that was the first thing that came to mind because it had been such a feat as parents that we'd been through and our youngest is now potty trained. And I was like, man, I just told a perfect stranger something that was totally irrelevant to the event we were at.
Nope, and
I passed the test.
I was trying to see who you were, and oh, you showed, and that was exactly the person I hoped you were. So it worked out great.
Yeah. Well, as I reflected on it, I'm like, you know what? My work is about being transparent and vulnerable, and you know, just authentic to who you are. And so that was what was on my mind, and that's what I shared. And it was important to me because, man, if all this work stuff is this important, hopefully my family is more important, right? So, yes. So that's what came to mind. Anyways, it was a really
words have never been spoken. That's the truth of it. And I think that's why we've enjoyed getting to know each other is because that's how it all started.
Totally. So you handled it well too. It was actually a test on my part. I decided, you know, in retrospect, that was a test. Could he handle the toddler talk? And you did well. So
I've been there. I have my time under tension. We've done a whole lot of potty training in this house and we have the wounds to prove it. So yeah.
Yeah, I think between the two of us, we could have like a soccer team or something. How many do you have?
Yeah, I think as of today, we have 5 kids. That's what was out there when I was out there a few minutes ago. And so we definitely have a team. We've got some substitutes too.
Totally. So anyways, Eric, I'm really excited to have you here. Do you want to just give a professional introduction? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So you know what, Chelsea? I've done a lot of things. I am technically a dentist. I think I graduated dental school in around 2007. And my entire life has been group practice. I did not think that would be my life back when I was in dental school. But alas, hey, you know, we take what we get. And over about a decade, I built practices that did a lot of dentistry. I think we delivered over $200 million in dentistry over that time. And at its largest, you know, I had just short of 300 employees and was quite a machine. I had transitioned to being a full-time CEO. I didn't have any clinical care responsibilities. And it was a lot. And honestly, as exciting as it looked from the outside, it wasn't what I wanted on the inside. I hadn't been the father I wanted to be or the husband that I wanted to be. And I almost felt like I was trapped inside the business that I'd built. And so in 2019, I completed an exit to a private equity company where I exited my interest. The company is still there and growing and in wonderful hands. And since then, I've spent a lot of time really figuring out more of who I am and who I wanted to be and how I wanted to serve. I built a number of companies and done a lot of coaching of executives. And for the last couple of years, I have been enjoying a role with the Dentist Entrepreneur Organization, the DEO, serving emerging and mid-market dental groups. And we built a ton of incredible content and training that has been super valuable to the members there. And now I'm kind of at a turning point again where it's time for me to shift once more. So that's kind of my story in life. Who knows how many more shifts there are. And I love it. Yeah, thanks for the journey.
Yeah. Gosh. Okay. So I have so many questions starting with, and I put it on your name tag there as well, but I noticed in your website and on your social, it says Dr. Eric J. Roman. So yeah. I don't know if that's just because it rolls off the tongue better or what's the J? What's the significance?
It's the internet. And what? Back when people were looking there, there were a lot of hits for like another Eric Roman. And so I had a little branding team that's like, let's go ahead and put the J in there. And so I worked with it, and we'll see what happens. But at the end of the day, I'm just Eric, and it works out fine. I wish Just Eric, maybe I should have looked into that.
Just Eric,
your handle. Yeah, Just Eric. But it is just technically a middle initial for James. My mom threw that one in there, and but I'm whatever you want to call me.
Okay, well, I just, you know, it was fancy on your website. The J is orange and everything. So it's
a little bit fancy. I know
that it looks nice.
I was like, hey, we can make this pop with a fancy J, and so it's like, go for it.
Yeah, I love it. All right, Dr. Eric J. Roman. So you had mentioned that along the way you just realized, and I think that you were referencing further along in your career, that you just realized you weren't where you wanted to be and feeling how you wanted to feel. But was that kind of the experience from the beginning when you first entered dentistry? You just always kind of had that feeling, or did you get to that point?
No, you know, when I entered dentistry, I didn't know anything about who I was, and I was just trying to win at life. You know, I think that's a game that we've been trained to play. You know, how are we going to win at life? How are we going to leave our mark? What we're really doing, Chelsea, is we're actually asking the question, how are we going to validate our existence? How are we going to keep score and show everybody that we're doing a great job? And I had a really fun journey. It was fun to grow dental companies, you know? Now, I've also got like the scar tissue all over my body from it and a bald spot up here. To act like the 10 years was like this sequential ramp of goodness and happiness is the biggest and most obvious lie for anybody that's ever operated a dental group. So it was filled with pain, a couple of brushes with bankruptcy. I lost everything once. And I kind of jumped from like the beginning to like the next end there, the like nice gap. But inside there's a lot of trouble. But it was really cool, you know? We did some really neat things, and we built practices in an area that had never seen practices like ours in the started in the sand hills of North Carolina. Now it's expanded to the entire state, a little bit into South Carolina as well. But our practices, like, they kicked butt. And you know, I think that's a lot of the journey that we get into inside of the dental industry is like, how do I, maybe the first hurdle, the first mountain, how do I create a practice that kicks butt, you know? And so then I created one that kicked butt. And then it was like, well, how do we kick more butt? Can we kick butt in another location? That seems kind of, and then we did it again. And it turns out people showed up again. And as a matter of fact, maybe we did some things better. And that was the cycle that continued, you know, well, let's try it again. And let's try it another time. And eventually you start building new challenges though, right? Like then, I think, you know what, this is like the evolution of building a dental group. Then the transition shifts from worrying about patient care and the things that are happening at the practice level. And it becomes organizational concerns, right? Like, my structure, how are we caring for our people? We have a finance issue now. Like we can't get any more lending to buy any new locations or to pick up or to build anything. So all of a sudden, I think your vision focuses from being at the care delivery level to being, then you go to maybe like the management level, and then you move on to like the organizational level of vision. And I think that's also probably one of the things that hurts our profession a bit too, is that I noticed that when my vision was up here at the organizational level, all of a sudden we were starting to have failures and slips down at the delivery of care level. That's probably why we all know DSOs and dental groups have a reputation, probably a big part of it, because when oftentimes what made us good when we were small is something we've taken our eye off of when we get big. And so, yeah, that was kind of the journey for me, but it was fun. Like I truly enjoyed it. Who doesn't like winning though? Right. Like, you know, I guess when I look back at it, Chelsea, I say it a lot of times, winning and victory are very poor teachers. First, because a lot of times, let's just be honest, maybe it was luck. Maybe the reason that I'd love to say that it was all of Eric Roman's ideas. That's the reason it went well. Maybe we just picked the right market at the right time. Mm-hmm. That's like, that, I'll take luck over being good any day of the week. And so, you know, as much fun as it was, the wins were motivating enough to keep me playing and to keep me wanting more. But the losses were my real teachers. You know, the losses and the failures, those are the things that the pain, pain is a magnificent teacher. Pain gives us the energy and the desire to want to change. And so as much as I enjoyed winning and as much as my winning probably kept me in the game, my pain is what made me better and what refined me as a man, as a leader, and refined our company.
You know, and I think it's really important to figure out what winning really looks like, which is a really introspective process. And I don't think it's something that most of us can come up with the answer on the spot. You got to really understand what winning means to you. And it's an individual thing, right, Eric? I mean, what's winning to you in your life and with your family is so different than what might be winning to me. And they're both right. They're both good things. But well, without that.
Well, if you don't mind, like, where does our concept of winning even come from? That was one of the questions I thought about. What winning looked like to me on the when I was in dental school, what I thought winning looked like for my future, then what winning looked like in my first months of practice was again different than what my what winning might look like in my first year of practice. And you know, it would be a different question if you asked Eric at quietly and tenderly as a man, as a husband and father, say, Eric, in your life, like, what does well done really look like? What is truly doing well look like for you? Versus when I'm in the office someday, or I'm at a CE event or something like that, and somebody's like, Eric, like, what are your goals? And what I realized is that there was a disconnect between those two things for me. And winning had become societally based, like what's the world fed me. Winning might be based on my house or my free time and the ability to travel. It might be based on the car I drive. It might be based on the size of my business, on the revenue that my business brings in, which could be totally different than the profit because there might not be any there. I learned that the hard way. And so what I realized, Chelsea, is that I absorbed this idea of winning from everybody around me, but it wasn't actually mine. As a matter of fact, too, I was building at one point, like our company was, and it's surpassed it. Our company was on a goal to hit $100 million. And I didn't need to have a $100 million company to have what I wanted out of my life. And that was really intriguing. As a matter of fact, a $100 million company might actually make it more difficult for me to have the things I want out of my life. I realized that in this concept of winning and invalidating my ego, and that I was actually playing a game for other people, not for me. And so like where, maybe that's a good question for everybody in the audience to consider, like where is your concept of winning even come from? Is it yours or is it someone else's?
And what's so interesting about that is this imaginary audience that we think is watching anyways, like is who is this? You know, when you talk about, did it come from my buddy or my ancestor or my favorite relative or professor, whoever, they're actually thinking about us a whole lot less than we think they are because they're doing their own things and they have their own version of winning that they're running after. And so it's really an important question because the other thing is other people are moving targets. So as we're growing and changing in our lives, like you said, you know, winning my first year in business is different than winning my 10th year in business. So are they. And so if they are our source of validation, it's going to be an ever-changing mark that we're going to have to meet to get there if they're even paying attention. Or we can take it back home and figure out what winning is to us and then what we want that journey to look like. Maybe it is building a $100 million business. Maybe it's building a $1 million practice. I don't know. Maybe it's none of those things, but if we know what it is, then we always have our eye on the ball and we can know which path to take to get there. That's so good. I love that you brought that up.
Yeah. And you know, you're right about the fact always having our eye on the ball. I think that's probably where I failed, is that episodically I was dialed in. Like every once in a while I'd read a book that hit home, or I'd have a good conversation or whatever, like, you know what it is, or you, and you know, it's probably pain-based. Oh, I'm hurting so bad because of something, you know, had a rough anniversary dinner with my wife. Like, and so let me get back. I'm going to pull it all back together. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do an event of like dialing it all back in again, but it's fleeting. It lasts a moment. And along the journey, we lose that focus if we're not continuous about reminding ourselves of why we're in it. And you know, the other thing in that, like, just like you said, we're dynamic. Like my goals or my intentions or my milestones or whatever I'm doing in life, they're always changing. And if I accept that, if I look back on 40 years of Eric, things always changed. Oh, I thought this, but this was actually better. I thought this, but this was actually better. Life had something wiser in store for me. If it's always been, won't it always be? And so if I look forward with the same lens that I'm now using to look back,
mm-hmm.
I can't even imagine the things that are going to bring me joy and the things that are going to be, I can't even imagine what the things that are going to be that are most prevalent in my life a year from now. And yet we try. Like we're as humans, like, we're such control freaks. We think we can control everything. Well, I'm going to set this goal and I'm going to freaking attain it. I'm going to crush it. And this is actually one of the things I teach teams, executive teams in dentistry. I'm like, listen, you know, we do operating system implementation. So like teaching them how to do great quarterly meetings, chart their course, crush it, like hit the goals, like all that stuff. We teach them how to be a functioning company. And you do the same thing. And yet the one thing I always remind them, because then they get to the end of the day and they're like, we got this quarter covered. I'm like, yeah, you think you do. Here's the thing. There's a 90% chance that for all the planning you guys just did, the thing that's going to be the biggest and most important for you to deal with inside of the quarter isn't even up here yet. It's the thing we never see coming. It's the little baby black swan that shows up, right? It's the COVID. It's the like personal health issue. It's the whatever it is. And so as humans, we're like, yep, we're going to control all the variables. And life says, shut up. I got better variables for you. You know? So, and you know what a big piece of my life has been enjoying that. Like being able to receive it and be like, oh, this sounds like so much fun. Yeah, we have a plan, but it's probably not going to turn out that way, but it's going to be even better, you know? So, yeah.
Okay, and there's such a difference between something coming at you that you didn't see coming and white knuckling it and putting on your happy face where everyone around you is just like waiting for the eggshells to drop, and actually embracing the thing that you didn't expect coming that kind of sucks a little bit, right? I am really, really big on energy because it changes the whole experience. It's kind of like, you know, you can eat a bunch of junk and that'll fuel you to walk a mile, or you can eat some nutrition and that will fuel you to walk a mile. But if you do that every single day for a year, at the end of the year, your unit is going to feel entirely different if you've been eating a whole bunch of nutrients and hydrating properly rather than the junk just to get through the moment or white knuckling the bad experience, right? And that is a skill set that takes a lot of thought and intentionality behind. When you were talking in your introduction about having, you know, you've been through some really fantastic financial times and you've been through some really rough financial times. I know we have listeners all across the board, but what would you say is the connection between how you're leading yourself and how you're thinking and how the energy you're operating from and your ability to pull out of a bankruptcy or get rid of that student loan debt?
Yeah, well, the first thing is like just being dialed into what you said. We have to start with an awareness of our energy. And I play the same thing too. I'm an energetic leader. I lead with my energy, and I've learned that as a leader, that's actually for my leadership style, my energy is what my teams desire from me. Like, it's not the system that I can create or the great idea that I had. It's the energy that we have infectiously to help pass on to our people and to help them, you know, drive and be motivated to grow as well. So being aware of where our energy is step number one. And the first thing that I had to start doing, Chelsea, was I had to nurture and care for my own energy. I have this really ridiculous concept I teach, and it's like the irony is, where do we normally put our energy? So when life says, okay, Eric, for the next 90 days, where's your energy going? What's the first thing that pops in your mind? It's like, okay, well, here's where my business needs like 100% of my energy, because we've got all these goals, we got all this stuff, right? And then you're like, and so you allocate 100% of your energy in there, and you go, and you're like, oh crap, I have a family or a personal life. I should allocate some energy there because I love these people. And like, so you're like, well, but I can't take away from the business because they need 100% of my time. So let me like maybe go into overtime. So now I'm at 115% capacity. I can handle this. I can sacrifice. Then you get, and you're like, but what about you? What about your energy? Like, where is the time for? And you're like, ah, screw me. You know, like I'm taking one for the team. I'm helping everybody else grow. I'm sacrificing. That's got a limit. When we apply our energy in that order of operations and we leave nothing for ourselves, that's going to be a big issue. So back to your original question, the first thing I had to do inside of my life was to begin creating space for it and making it okay for me to be well cared for. That meant that I had to be, just like you talked about with food, I had to be caring for my body. What goes in, what comes out, like the energy, everything there was critical, and not just physically, but also mentally, right? What are the habits that I have to create to care for myself? I had to have strong relationships and I had to be nurturing them. You know, I had to be assuring that like my purpose was being fulfilled in what I did. And honestly, an important part of my energy, kind of what you touched on, is I needed to know and have a plan for like my financial picture. It's amazing. Hey, when dollar bills aren't coming in, like how quick does that put us into a scarcity mindset, right? Or when our payments are bigger than our income, that like immediately flips and sucks out our energy. They're energy vampires for us, right? And so I had to recognize that it starts with me. It doesn't end with me. So it's like turning that pyramid I designed upside down and saying, okay, how do I care for myself and focus on it to create an abundance of energy that now I have to share in all the other places, you know? And so maybe the first part is just checking in and knowing where we stand. And what I actually discovered inside of that is I didn't know a lot about myself. I didn't know what things fueled me or put me in a good frame of mind. I didn't know how to manage stress inside of my life. So when stressful things came up, I had developed bad habits for managing them. One of those bad habits was to turn my back on it. So the bill comes in, the bill that you know you didn't want to see, that you didn't want to deal with, that you wanted to just remove from your mind. And one of my strategies on it was like, bury it. Like, let's just get it out of the way for a little bit. And that, it turned out, didn't serve me very well. Because that actually took what could have just been a minute of energy and it turned it into like a nagging thing in the back of my mind. Like every time I walked in and I saw the corner of the bill, I'm like, yeah, tuck it back in again. So I really had to learn about like what were going to be successful strategies for me to manage all those energy vampires that were coming my way.
Mm-hmm. And that's really important because, you know, sometimes when you get in there and you start doing that work, one of the things that happens, it's happened to me, and I know it happens with a lot of my clients, is when you become aware of the thoughts that you're having, sometimes it's not a really pretty picture. And you realize that a lot of them are the types of things you teach your kids not to think or say, or the things that you would walk away from if a whole group of people, if that's how they were interacting, those were the thoughts they were sharing, you'd be like, I'm out of here. But that's what's swimming around up there all day long. And so mismanaged or ignored, it really does drain you down. And so having those systems in place to filter and make intentional decisions about, hey, is that thought even serving me? Is that something I want to continue to circulate? And then knowing what to do with, you know, the thoughts about things that we do need to handle. We do need to handle the bill and have a plan for that. So give us a trick. What's one of the things that you do when there's something that is stressful or is emotionally intensive for you and needs to be handled and probably isn't going to be immediately resolved, but it needs a plan.
So how does it show up? The first place it shows up for me is in lost sleep. I sleep well. Like this guy don't have no problem sleeping, except when there's crap mounting in my life. Mm-hmm. And so on those nights when I'm sitting there and I'm lying in bed, and now I've built really good sleep habits. So like this is a function of a design. But when I'm lying there in bed, and you know that feeling with like all the gears turning inside your head, like things are really moving fast inside there,
mm-hmm.
and I can't sleep, I know something is stuck inside, and I know I can fight it all that I want. It's not going anywhere. So I've learned recognition, right? And then I get out of bed now. I get out of bed and I'm like, all right, we got to go get this puppy out. And what I do is I just walk out of the room into my office. I get out my notebook. I get out some paper of any kind, and I just flow everything out of here. Whatever is sitting inside my brain has to get out onto paper. And the way that I describe this is that whether it's positive energy, like it's a great new idea, sometimes that's what it is, or whether it's the really negative things that are holding us back, like how am I going to solve this? What am I going to do with it? They're up here keeping us awake, or they're working inside of our brains, and they're trying to find a home and they can't find one. And so it's just stuck up here in front of your head. It's in your awareness. And even if it's not quite in your conscious awareness, it's eating up the energy that you need to be using for other things. And, you know, for us as leaders too in life, or anybody, like we have things every day that need our attention and our energy. But when we have these open cycles that are flipping around in there that we haven't been able to deal with, it's sapping the energy that we have for the things that we want to give to, whether it's our kids, whether it's our businesses, whether it's just a job duty, right? It's eating us up. So I get it out of my brain and I get it down onto paper. I have to get it out of here because here it's stuck and it's like short-circuited everything. When I get it down onto paper, what's really interesting, Chelsea, is I can almost go back to sleep instantaneously. Mm-hmm. And a couple of things like, you know, the next day when I come back to this and I look at it, I have to ask myself some questions, right? So this was inside and this is like tripping up our mechanism. Does it absolutely need, must this be dealt with? Do you know what I realized in life, Chelsea, was that 80% of my overwhelm was self-imposed. In other words, it was all crap I wanted to do or I needed to do or felt right to do in order to look like I was winning, right? But I'll give you an example. Like, you know, Eric, like you met the other, you were at the CE program, you saw how awesome their hygiene department is and you realized how bad yours is. Functionally, right? Mm-hmm. And so now I'm nagged and I'm overwhelmed because this, amongst a number of other things, is eating me up. And then I look at it and I'm like, well, my hygiene department's been this way for 7 years. It's like treating hygiene okay. It could be better, but this isn't a must right now. This is like just self-imposed pain. I saw somebody else that had something better, so now I feel worse, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the first question is, do we need to address it? Then the second question, or if we look at it and we say yes, then we have to build a plan. And the first step in building a plan is to define what done actually looks like. Like, what are we really trying to accomplish inside of things? So often, do you know one of the biggest ones? I mean, listen, I've been coaching dentists for a long time. And we have to do this. Every dentist I've ever worked with, every dental entrepreneur has this. We have to go through an exercise with it. And what gets them more often is like, oh, I like taxes. I'm like, taxes. Here we are. Like, it's the end of the year. You're filing. What is done actually look like, right? And what it turns out is that we're actually upset and angry over potentially like all this excess money that might need to get paid, but it's too late. That was last year. You can't do anything right now to change that. The only thing that you can change right now relative to taxes is this year. So in other words, like you're stressed about just a piece of paper that you really have to sign and a check that you have to mail. You just got to get it over, you know? Mm-hmm. And the real stressor is like, okay, well, if what you're upset about is that you feel like you're not managing your taxes, that's something we should be talking about now and managing for next year. But this is like done means signing the paper and being done with it. That's it. You just got to meet with your CPA and get it done. Like schedule a meeting, 1 hour, know what's happening, or better yet, I got to the point where I just like, listen, I'm going to sign the paper no matter what. Just tell me what's signed. I'm going to sign it. And I'm just not going to let this be something that eats me up. So let's move on, you know? So anyway, we have to recognize, we have to get these things out of our head so that we can take a strategic approach to them. Do they matter or do they really not matter? If they don't matter, get them out of there and just let it go and put it. I have a holding spot. I have a whole list over here in my Mac, and it's like things for someday. And you know what is one of my favorite things in the whole world? I've got an item that's been sitting in my most important get this done. And then I realize this really isn't important. This is eating up energy and it makes me upset every time I don't get it done. And so I just take it and I drop it into the list someday. And do you know what the best part is? I never go into that someday list. These are just like great ideas that don't have a home and don't need a home. It's like the, what was it in Rudolph? Like the land of misfit toys. Just go, you know, like the land of misfit ideas. Just let them go live there. If it's important, it'll come back up someday. And then when you do have things that are important, finally, we just have to build proactive strategies of solving them. And the first step in solving is knowing what done looks like. So that was like it's like my mental workflow algorithm there.
I am a huge proponent of writing. It is so powerful. It's magical. And if you don't believe in magic, then we'll call it powerful. I believe in both. But, you know, I have so much belief in it that I've become really particular about even how the paper feels. I want to always have like really a notebook that I'm attracted to writing in, because it's different than voice memoing it. It's different than typing it on a computer. The physical act of writing it and getting it out of your brain and onto your paper, it either, like you said, creates that immediate relief, or it's the fetus of a beautiful birth that you're going to have of this idea or creation. And it's just, you know, it's remarkable. A while back, we decided that we wanted some land. So I wrote, you know, I own acreage, and I wrote that and I believed it and it just felt right. And we were out driving one day out in an area that we hadn't ever driven before. And we came across this section that we just really liked. And we were like, there were like 15 houses in there. And we're like, well, what is this? We're going to go in there. So we went in and we drove it and we're like, wow, this is beautiful. And there were a few lots available. And my husband said, well, if I was ever going to live in a neighborhood, because he's not a neighborhood kind of guy, he's like, if I was going to live in a neighborhood long term, it would be that lot, which is apparently sold. So we're going. I'm like, well, I'm going to call on it. So I called and the lady was like, oh yeah, all the lots are sold. Except this morning I got a call and the doctor that owns this one lot, he just took a job out in California. So that one's available. It's going to go on the market tomorrow. And I was like, well, which one is it? And it was the one that he had said, that's the only one I would ever live in. So we bought the lot and then we sold the lot. But point being, you know, when you write something down, you can have that intentional experience with it where it either dissipates because you've now given it a home. It was ridiculous and self-imposed stress and frustration. We were catastrophizing something that it wasn't even real in advance, or it is real and it is real for you. And it's something you need to pay attention to. And by putting it there, you can have that experience with it and know what action to take next. So I think that's just brilliant. I love it. What notebooks do you like? You shook your head on that.
Yeah, totally. I did. So I have found these things on Amazon. I can't even remember the name of it. I'll have to look it up and we can post it afterwards.
Put in the show notes. Yeah.
This is like in the show notes, we're going to put it in there. I love them. They're relatively expensive. I get a new one every quarter. And so I change the color of it. I put the quarter and the time down here on the bottom of it. And I actually have, as part of my own personal operating system, I have like documents built out inside of it. I've got my scorecards and my projects built in here. I have my personal life vision. I have my intentions for my life, my big picture, all the places that get my energy, the people that I'm staying connected to and that are important to me, powerful questions I ask, like so many things. And then in the back of my journal, I put in there, I do check-ins every quarter with each of my kids and I document them. And so I have my check-ins built into my journal as well. Girl, like this is like you're preaching to the choir and it's all about the paper. It is like, so do you know there's science supports this also. So the interesting thing about science with writing things down is that when we don't write things down, sometimes we only get one opportunity for our brain to process it. So when you're speaking to me right now, if I'm just listening and nodding, that's one time, one processing. But when we write something down, we actually at least triple the amount of processing and thought that it gets. Not only that, we're moving it between the different hemispheres of our brain. So as you know, we listen with one side, like which is often kind of different than where we process information. So when I'm listening to you and I'm writing something down afterwards, it's having to go through my entire motor neuron system. The processing that's happening to write down something to make a note is very different. The tactile feel of writing a word is so different and so much more powerful than just the word by itself. And so now you're getting the second incredible processing where it's moving it deeper into our psyches and it's exposing it to other neurons. But then there's something even more amazing and you actually have to look at it again. And now you're getting processing through your eyes. So you've processed through your ears, you've processed through your hands and your body, you've processed through your mind and your eyes. Like, so we're getting so much more when we write something down like that and we put it in action. And like, and listen, you know, we both talk about energy with it. That's how we create momentum, is with the energy that that does. Like, that's why I have a journal. I've even gotten into like the whole journaling thing. Like every day I have a journaling cycle that I go through of writing things down. And it's been really cool. Really, really cool. I thought it was lame at first. I was like, I'm never going to do that. And it's become one of the favorite things inside of my life.
Isn't it great? And it's so tempting to be like, oh, I don't have time for that. And now after being in practice, I'm like, I actually don't have time to not do that.
And this journal goes everywhere with me. Like every meeting, everything. When I first met you, like I have my journal right there. Like it just, it's like my companion. So I love it.
I love it too. Well, hey, I could talk to you about this stuff all day. Before I let you go, I do have two more questions. One is you mentioned that your sleep cycle is intentional. Talk to me about why, because it is for me too. And I'd love to know what yours is and why.
Yeah. Well, first off, like we have to figure out our own bodies. Everybody's got different amounts of sleep that they need, environments and all that sort. Sleep is when our processing happens and when we rebuild, that's when our muscles rebuild. That's when our brains relax. So what I've learned inside my life is that if my sleep is off, eventually everything else will be off. And so it's like a first things first sort of principle for me. Sleep and exercise, without those, like I can even let diet slide if I'm sleeping and exercising for a little bit. Without sleep and exercise, this guy's worthless.
Totally. Same. 100%. And I think there's two parts to that. I think like the physical body actually needs to be nurtured in a really intentional and individualized way. But beyond that, what's underlying the inaction is usually a thought error that needs to be addressed.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And again, you know, I talk about how intentional I am about caring for myself now. I was such a jerk to me for so many years. Like I was so inconsiderate to Eric. And Eric's body was always saying, Eric, I don't like this. I need more. I'm like, shut up. We got things to do, you know? And so I did that for decades. Like, and I'm not an early morning person. And I woke up at like 4:30 in the morning for years to like win. And then my body was like, let's see what's possible if you listen to me for a little bit. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, I love that. I'm the same. And then tell me, you mentioned also at the beginning, you were like, okay, now I'm at another pivot point. So what's this pivot point?
Well, I'm glad you asked. You know, I've spent so much of my life helping dentists build incredible wealth. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I learned along that journey was that oftentimes we built wealth, but we didn't build any joy or happiness out of it. And that the only answer we have when we're not happy is to build more wealth or to build more stuff business wise. And my discovery was that it's not because that's what's most important. It's because we don't have any other plan. It's we don't know how to get what we want out of our personal lives or out of our families. And that's something that I've been intentional about building. And so My new phase right now is I've built an operating system for individuals to put ourselves first so that we can be our best for the people around us, including our families. So that's the next phase of what I'm doing. And it's the most enjoyable thing I've ever talked about or done. And I feel like it's the culmination of everything I've been building to for a while.
And is that where, you know, the website with the beautiful J, is that where people could find out more about that?
Yeah, DrEricJRoman.com. Yeah, we're launching a program in the fall called the One Life Circle. But, you know, at the end of the day, I just live for that type of interaction and talking about real things like this. And whether it's a team member or a founder or everybody in between, you know, we all have a right to get what we want out of life and to be truly fulfilled and to have fun and to have freedoms, right? And so that's my goal, is to spread those three things.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think I would just leave people with a challenge because it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to change where we're at or what we're doing. Sometimes we're in the exact right spot, just operating from the wrong or a low utility thought process or perspective. And so the challenge I want to give is that the listeners write. If there's something on your mind, write. If there's a feeling that you have, a good one, a bad one, right, and see what comes out. It can be really revealing to see what your pen actually puts on that paper when you just allow it to flow.
Ooh, I echo that challenge. When I was trapped, Chelsea, the only way that I was not trapped by my business. I thought I was, so I thought I had to exit the business. We have so many people that are like, I hate my environment. You're not trapped by your environment. You're actually just trapped by your thinking and your brain. Yes. What I hope for is that by addressing the way that we're approaching our lives, we recognize we don't have to make all the changes that we thought we did inside of our professional endeavors and inside of our business lives. So I hear you loud and clear and agree 100%.
I love it. Well, gosh, I could do this. Let's do this again. This was a lot of fun. And I loved having you on today, Eric. Thank you.
I appreciate you joining me for today's episode. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show. And visit dentallife.coach for access to additional coaching tools, as well as more episodes to help you create the dental life you truly desire.